are going to hold a National Parks 101 lesson this hour in celebration of National Parks Week. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We hope to explore some of the biggest and best national parks, and I hope we will also get to some of the hidden gems, too, ones that might not be as well known, maybe some of those that are closer to home. Is there a national park somewhere in the Midwest that you love or that you want to explore? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine. Dean Show. We will talk with our guest about the value of our national parks, how to get out and best explore them, and we'll also talk some about how recent politics and policy decisions have affected the National Park Service and talk about the future of our national parks. Let me welcome our guest, James Kaiser, travel writer and photographer. He has written four national park guidebooks, including guides for Yosemite and the Grand Canyon. And he shares travel tips and more at jameskaiser.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us. So give us your pitch. Why should we get out and celebrate National Parks Week?
Well, you know, National Parks Week is it's a terrific week because it's a time to, you know, sort of step back and reflect upon our national parks, which are, you know, some of the most incredible places in the United States, some of our most historic places, some of our most beautiful places. And, you know, they really represent who we are as a country. I mean, they really sort of represent the best of the United States. The national parks were an idea that were born right here in the United States. National parks didn't exist until we, you know, created them here. And it's an idea that spread around the world. And this idea that, you know, national parks are a place where anybody can go, enjoy nature, spend some time in the wilderness, it's a very democratic idea. And it's spread, like I said, all over the world. And that's an amazing thing. And this is a week to sort of step back and reflect on that.
And you are currently abroad. Thank you very much, by the way, for joining us. But if you were in the United States, how would you celebrate National Parks Week?
I would absolutely be in a national park, and hopefully as many as possible. You know, one of the great things about National Park Week is this past weekend and this coming weekend, admission is free at all national parks. And that's not just national parks, that's all 417 National Park Service units. So that includes national monuments, national historic areas, national seashores. Admission is free. There's no better time to go out and enjoy the parks. And, you know, there's such a range of things you could do, and there's so many places, you know, there's bound to be one near where you live. It's a great time to go out and enjoy them.
Yeah, we will, by the way, be welcoming in a little bit later in the hour the park superintendent of the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, one that's right here in Wisconsin. So we'll be talking with him coming up at about 6:45. But right now we are talking with James Kaiser, travel writer and photographer, who has written four national park guidebooks. And we are welcoming your favorite national parks. We're welcoming why you value the national parks. We're welcoming whether you have any concerns about the future of the national parks. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And in fact, if you post on Facebook, maybe you'd like to post a photo maybe that you've taken from a favorite national park or a park that you would like to visit. James, national parks welcomed a record 331 million visitors in 2016, according to the Department of the Interior. It is the third consecutive year of record attendance for the parks. What do you think is driving more and more people to our national parks?
Well, you know, last year was obviously a really big year for the National Park Service. It was the centennial celebration. We were celebrating 100 years of the National Park Service. And, you know, NPS really did a great job of promoting the parks. You know, they viewed it as an event to make Americans more aware of these incredible places that are in our own backyard. And I think a lot of people, you know, sort of haven't visited them, you know, had sort of been off their radar. And so that awareness led to, I think, a tremendous amount of this, you know, record-breaking growth. But at the same time, you know, national parks are becoming an increasingly valuable asset in the world. I mean, you know, we're growing more urban. People are spending less time in nature. You know, some of the statistics I've heard recently are, you know, the average American spends 10 hours a day in front of a screen, whether that's a TV or a smartphone. And, you know, as our lives are increasingly digital, you know, national parks are sort of a tactile reminder of who we are and where we came from. And I think people are really starting to understand the value of spending time in nature. And, you know, the Park Service itself is very aware of this, and they have recently launched a new program called Park Prescription, which they're going to be celebrating this Sunday. And it's essentially a day to, you know, value and understand the health benefits of spending time in nature. And there's no better place to spend time in nature than in a national park. So I think all of these factors are driving a record increase. You know, there's also a tremendous amount of foreign visitors who, when they come to the United States, they want to visit national parks. You know, sometimes it's very striking at some of our largest parks, the number of visitors who are foreign. You know, they understand that these parks are incredible, that they're amazing places to visit. And I think sometimes, you know, it's sort of human nature to overlook what's in your own backyard. But I think that for a lot of Americans, they're starting to realize, hey, these places are truly world-class and truly special.
And I did notice that the National Parks is, at least in some of its promotions, is saying National Parks 101, which in a way is a play off of the now 101st anniversary of the founding of the mm-hmm. National Park System, and that they're trying to encourage people to, you know, learn more about the parks and what the parks offer, and to learn how to best explore the national parks. How would you recommend that we prepare for a possible national park visit? How can we best explore the national parks?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the first things you can do is find out which national parks are close to you. And National Park Service is a great website for this. Find your park, and you can go there, type in your zip code. It'll show you all the national parks, national monuments, everything that's nearby. That's a great way to discover places that you might not even know exist very close to home. But even if you're going someplace, you know, far away, someplace halfway across the country, there's definitely some travel tips to keep in mind. And one of, you know, my favorites is also sort of one of the most obvious, and that's to plan ahead. You know, as parks are so popular now, as more and more people are discovering them, both here in the U.S. and internationally, everything, campsites, hotel rooms, hiking permits, are easier to get the farther ahead you plan. And for, you know, say the top 10 national parks, you know, the big ones, Grand Canyon, Yosemite, Yellowstone, you should really plan your trip as far ahead as possible. You know, if you're hoping to find a hotel room in mid-July and you're calling up a month ahead of time, there's a good chance you're not going to find a hotel. Now, there's ways that you can go around that. There's hotels outside the park. There's, you know, camping. There's a whole bunch of options to still enjoy the parks, but the earlier ahead that you plan, the better it's going to be. Another one of my favorite recommendations as far as, you know, planning ahead for a park is figure out how you're going to ditch your car. So many people, when they go to national parks, don't venture that far from their car. You know, they sort of drive through the popular driving roads, the scenic byways that we have in the parks. But really, one of the best ways to experience a park is to get out of your car, to go for a hike. And on top of that, if you're visiting peak season, you know, which is June, July, August, you're going to be encountering some of the same hassles that you would find, you know, back home in the city, which would be looking for a parking space, you know, traffic lines, especially the park entrances. And there's a lot of great ways that you can ditch your car. I mean, the Park Service is absolutely trying to help people get out of their cars and not use them. There are free shuttles. Grand Canyon National Park just this year in March initiated a new shuttle service, which goes from the gateway town of Tucson into the park. And so you don't even have to wait in line at the entrance station. You can park your car in Tucson. You can get on the shuttle. It'll take you right into the park. It really relieves a lot of the hassle that you might have.
Let me jump in because we do have news next from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then we'll continue to get some more tips on how we can best explore our national parks. And would love to hear from you. What is the next national park that you would like to visit? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
So that song always reminds me of the national parks. Woody Guthrie, This Land is Your Land. We are talking about our national parks, as it is National Parks Week. And there is free admission at the national parks this week. And we are talking with a guest about how we can best explore them. And we are welcoming your questions about the national parks. We're welcoming your favorite national parks. We're welcoming the ones that are on your travel list. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And if you post on Facebook, if you have a favorite photo from a national park, post that as well. Carol on Facebook says she is going to the Grand Canyon and Arches National Park in September. So she's got it planned. James Kaiser is our guest. He has written four national park guidebooks, including guides for Yosemite and the Grand Canyon. And James, so any tips for those of us who might want to go to the Grand Canyon?
Absolutely. So like I mentioned, you know, they have this new shuttle. It's a great new service where you can leave your car outside the park. It'll take you in, and there's free shuttles that'll take you around the park. So you don't have to worry about parking. You don't have to worry about any of that. But, you know, a common mistake that people make when they go in the Grand Canyon is, you know, you walk up to the rim, you take in the view. It's extraordinary. It's beautiful. It's like nothing you've ever seen. And after enjoying it for, you know, several minutes, you sort of wonder, well, what do I do next? You know, there's this incredible view, but how do I enjoy this vast park? And it looks, you know, beautiful but desolate. It looks rugged. You know, what do you do? I really recommend getting below the rim. If you go for a hike and you go into the Grand Canyon, that's where it really starts to get spectacular. You know, and obviously, you know, it's a steep hike from the rim to the river. The park does not recommend you attempt that in a single day. The deceptive thing about Grand Canyon hiking is that it's very easy on the way down and it's very difficult on the way up. Your guest who's going to Grand Canyon in September. September is a great month to go. The temperatures are a little bit cooler. That's great for hiking. But, you know, you can walk down a trail partway, you know, as long as you feel comfortable, and then come back up. And as you descend into the Grand Canyon, you know, you're stepping through layers of geologic time. And that's really what makes the Grand Canyon so spectacular is, you know, it's like this layer cake with, you know, hundreds of millions, billions of years of Earth history arranged chronologically for your viewing pleasure. So it really allows you to get up close and personal with the geologic forces that created this, you know, vast, epic landscape. But there's things beyond hiking. You know, you can rent a bike. There's terrific bike trails along the rim. Drive to some of the lesser-known parts of the Grand Canyon. You know, everyone tends to concentrate around Grand Canyon Village. There's a couple of very famous viewpoints there. But if you head in the direction of Hermit's Rest, or if you go in the direction of Desert View, there's terrific, beautiful viewpoints that are much less visited. Really gives you a chance to sort of take in the canyon, personally at your own speed and not necessarily surrounded by throngs of visitors.
Yeah. And a number of listeners are going to some of the really well-known ones. Carol's going to Arches, too. Don on Facebook says going to Denali in Alaska this year. Do you have a national park that you consider a real hidden gem that is beautiful, spectacular, wonderful, and hardly anybody or, you know, fewer people go to it?
You know, there are several, and this is one of the interesting things about national parks is when you think of national parks, you think of, you know, Grand Canyon, Yellowstone, Yosemite, you know, really the big names. And if you look at the statistics, I mean, they're the ones that are drawing millions of visitors. And everyone sort of tends to concentrate in these top 10. But there are 59 national parks, and some of them barely receive, you know, 20, 30,000 visitors a year. There's a terrific national park. I haven't been there. But, you know, everything I've read about it, the photos I've seen, Isle Royale, not too far away from where you're at.
Right.
And it is stunning. And I think something like 25,000 people a year go there. To put that in perspective, roughly 6 million people went to Grand Canyon. Roughly 5 million people went to Yosemite. So there are all these terrific parks. But one of my absolute favorites is Channel Islands. Which is located off the coast of Southern California. You know, people call Channel Islands the Galapagos of North America.
Wow.
It's an island chain with these endemic species. And even though it lies, you know, a few miles off the coast of Southern California, just that distance, you know, having to get there by boat, not that many people go there, despite the fact that it's, you know, one of the most dense population centers in the U.S., and that's a real gem.
And where are the Channel Islands? Like in reference to, I don't know, Catalina Island?
So they're north of Catalina. They'd be off the coast of Santa Barbara.
Oh, okay. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org if you'd like to talk about your favorite national park or the one that you would like to visit. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll talk more about what the national parks have to offer, but we also wanted to talk a little bit during this hour about the politics surrounding the national parks. In his budget proposal, President Trump is proposing a cut of nearly 12% to the annual budget of the Department of the Interior, which oversees the National Park Service. If that cut were to go into effect, James, what kind of an impact do you think it would have on the parks?
You know, the National Park Service is an agency that consistently doesn't get the funds that it needs. You know, currently there's a $12 billion maintenance backlog. That's $12 billion of projects that the National Park Service would like to do to improve the parks, and they don't have the resources. You know, cutting the funding, especially at a time when national park visitation is surging, you know, that's going to lead to more and more problems. You know, there's not going to be enough rangers to patrol areas, to make sure that people are safe, to make sure that, you know, traffic situations don't get out of control. It's just going to lead to a diminished experience for everyone. And believe me, you know, I agree. You know, there are ways that the Park Service could become more efficient. I mean, I just applied for hiking permits for a Half Dome in Yosemite National Park and, you know, had to fax in, you know, my request. You know, it's a little strange to me to fax anything these days. So, you know, there's definitely things that could be more efficient, that could be improved. But, you know, the kind of cuts that we're talking about here, you know, the parks just, at this point, with the surge in visitors, I mean, I don't think it's a smart decision.
Yeah. Are there any other challenges that you see facing the parks in the coming years?
You know, one of the things that concerns me the most at the moment is the fate of the Antiquities Act. And this is an act that was created in 1906. It's been used by 16 presidents, half Republican, half Democrat, to declare 149 national monuments. This is an act that allows the president, with the swipe of a pen, to declare a national monument. It was used by Teddy Roosevelt to protect Grand Canyon. It was used to protect Acadia, Grand Teton, Zion, Arches, the Statue of Liberty. It's been an enormously beneficial tool for presidents to protect scenic, beautiful, historic areas in the United States. At the moment, there are some politicians that are calling for amending the Antiquities Act to allow states to block the president's decision. And that would essentially render the Antiquity Act useless. Now, the thinking behind it is that, you know, we don't want federal overreach. We don't want the federal government, with a swipe of a pen, a president simply declaring that a piece of land in a state is now going to be a national monument. So it's, you know, sort of been a states' rights argument. I view that as a false argument because the Antiquities Act only affects lands that the federal government already owns. All it does is add another layer of protection. So it's an incredible act. It's been a bipartisan tool. And the thought that it could change, you know, that concerns me.
Yeah. There's also the so-called rogue national park accounts that were popping up on Twitter earlier this year in response to some of the actions of the Trump administration. Are we seeing the parks becoming more politicized than before? And I'm wondering if you think that's a good or bad thing.
You know, I think the parks perhaps could be more politicized. I think we're just living in more politicized times, frankly. But I think it's a real shame that something like the National Park Service, which belongs to the people, its lands belong to the people, you know, enjoying nature is not a Republican or Democratic issue. It's something that all people enjoy, and they do it in different ways, you know, whether it's, you know, people that enjoy going out and hunting, or people that enjoy going out and hiking. And I mean, obviously, you know, you can't hunt in a national park, but, you know, these are things that everybody should enjoy. I don't think there's anybody that would go to the Grand Canyon and look at the view and think, well, you know, because I'm this political party, I don't enjoy this view as much, you know, or you go to Yosemite and you're looking at Half Dome and you feel that way. These are just simply beautiful places. They're historic places. They're part of what makes us who we are. And, yeah, I don't think that should be politicized.
Let's take some more calls, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org if you have a question, a thought, a recommendation regarding our national parks. Is there one that you love to go to or would like to go to? Is there one that's closer to home, perhaps, that you'd like to recommend? John in Boaz is with us. Hi, John.
Good morning, Joy and James. I recommend Isle Royale National Park, and it's absolutely, in one word, it's beautiful.
Yeah, have you been there? Tell us about it, John.
Well, you go up to Houghton Hancock and get on the Ranger boat. You travel about 5 hours out on the Lake Superior. You go into Rock Harbor, and they have rental cabins. We stayed at a rental cabin for a whole week, and we almost got ran over by a teenage moose on accident.
That is
it's
so
great
cool.
Fun. They
you
have
consider
moose.
Yourself lucky. That sounds like an amazing encounter.
Yeah, it was fun. I was wondering about, not to change the subject, but I was wondering about the Driftless National Park, the inception of a new park in the Driftless region of Crawford County, Wisconsin.
Huh. There's talk about making that national, John?
Yes.
I didn't know that. Do you know about that, James? That's in Wisconsin.
I had not heard about that, but, you know, I'm aware that there are currently no national parks in Wisconsin. I think it would be great if you guys had one.
We're going to look into that, John. Thanks very much. The Driftless area is absolutely gorgeous. And Isle Royale is on my list. I almost went last summer, and It was that long. There's that long ferry ride, and I just didn't have enough time to adequately do that trip. So maybe this summer, it is definitely one that a lot of people have recommended. Let's go next to Ann in Monona. Hi, Ann.
Hi, I wanted to recommend the Chiricahua National Monument, which is in far southeastern Arizona, and Arizona is just a gold mine of abandoned and fascinating places, and the Chiricahua National Monument is a mountainous sora, a very, very hilly area with really sharp peaks, and I believe it's where Geronimo surrendered to the feds. Geronimo, of course, was Geronimo and Cochise were Chiricahua Apaches, and it's just absolutely stunning, and I drove from California to the East Coast way back in the 70s, and there was almost no one there. I don't think most people even had heard of it. And, of course, Geronimo had a very ferocious reputation, and it was a very, you know, a sad moment for the Apaches. And I also wanted to say we need John Muir, founder of the National Park System and big fighter for them, back to fight against some of these reactionary ideas being implemented right now.
Thank you, Ann. Is there a John Muir of today, James?
Ooh, a John Muir of today. I mean, I think he was a pretty exceptional, singular guy.
Yeah.
I'm very familiar with the work that he did in Yosemite. You know, that was sort of his, where he drew so much of his inspiration. And, you know, it's one of these things we're extraordinarily fortunate as a nation to have somebody like John Muir, who was an immigrant, by the way, who really helped us appreciate our wild natural areas. You know, it almost took the eyes of an outsider to, you know, help us understand how extraordinary our country truly is.
Yeah. And I'll mention that that area of Arizona and, well, Utah and that western, southwestern area, all full of national parks. Talk a little bit about how we choose what areas become national parks.
Yeah, and I mean, Ann was completely correct. Arizona is an extraordinary place with incredible landscapes. You know, whenever I go there, it's almost hard to choose. Well, where do I go? There's so much to see. And, I mean, if you look at a map of the United States, really the majority of national parks are west of the Mississippi. And one of the big reasons for that is because when the national park idea was really catching on, a lot of the west was still, you know, pretty wide open, fairly easy to say, you know, well, we're going to take this land that nobody's using and we're going to create a national park. You know, obviously there's also a tremendous amount of incredible landscapes out there, whether it's desert, mountain, you know, you name it, the West has got it. But I also think that there's sort of a misperception that, you know, the national parks are only out West. You know, I'm originally from Maine. The first guidebook that I ever wrote was to Acadia National Park. And Acadia is a stunning area on the coast of Maine. It's where the mountains meet the sea. And that's actually a very, you know, interesting story. Acadia was really brought to life by a group of private individuals who, you know, gathered money. They were very wealthy. John D. Rockefeller Jr. was part of this group. And they said, you know what, we're going to make an effort to take this land that's privately owned, we're going to buy it, and we're going to create a national park out of it.
I'm glad they did. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about our national parks, and we'll visit the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, too. It is National Parks Week, and we are celebrating national parks with our guests this hour. And we're welcoming your questions about them. We're welcoming your favorite national parks. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We have been talking with James Kaiser, a travel writer and photographer who has written four national park guidebooks, including guides for Yosemite and the Grand Canyon. He shares travel tips and more at jameskaiser.com. And we are very happy to welcome in, for a short period, a park superintendent at the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. So we'll explore a national lakeshore close to home. Bob Krummenacker is our guest, park superintendent at Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Nice to be back on your show.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. So, are you expecting big crowds this weekend for National Parks Week?
Well, it's 36 degrees looking out on Lake Superior right now, and water temperature is about 34. So, to be honest, no. Spring is not the most popular time up here, but we're looking for a good summer, though. You know, if we've got good weather this summer, we've had some high visitation the last couple of years. And as James had said, the marketing for the National Park Centennial has really been effective. And then, of course, we've really hit the national headlines the last few years with ice caves in the winter. So people have discovered the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, which is really Wisconsin's national park.
Yeah, I am. Those ice caves were so spectacular, and people were hoping they would come back. Are they ever going to come back?
Well, we had them in 2014, and we had them in 2015. We haven't had them the last two winters, though. Climate change is definitely having an impact. There's a lot less ice now than there has been in the past. And so, yes, we'll see them, but they'll be increasingly rare, I think. So when they do form, people should flock up here quickly and not wait.
You know, Bob, I was going to come up to the Bayfield area this winter, and one of the things I wanted to do was I wanted to get on the ice road between Bayfield and Madeline Island. But as far as I know, that didn't freeze over solid until May, if it did at all, very, very late in the winter. I mean, it was open water a lot.
Well, we had a thin layer of ice for most of the winter. Looking out my window, I could see white most of January and February, but the ferry was still running. And
that's
in fact,
right.
This was the second winter in a row that the navigation season never closed. And one of the things that's really amazing about this area, Bayfield was founded in 1856, and it was a seaport. And so people have been monitoring the navigation season really from the first days that they settled the village of Bayfield. So we have about 160 years of really good records. And this winter, with 2 years in a row of no ice road, that's the first time ever in 160 years.
So let's talk about the summer when it is a little bit warmer. Why should people check out the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore?
Well, we heard several people earlier in the show talk about how wonderful Isle Royale is, and I would agree with that. But Isle Royale is a very difficult place to access. The Apostle Islands offer many, if not most, of the same amenities and spectacular beauty that Isle Royale does, and they're a little closer to home. Bayfield is a beautiful place to base a visit out of, with B&Bs and nice restaurants, and you can take an excursion boat for just a few hours at a time to get out to one of the 21 islands. There are more lighthouses here in the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore than any other national park in the country. In fact, we have nine standing light towers and the ruins of a tenth, all of which are historic and significant, and many of them have tours that we offer. We've also got probably the best sailing and freshwater sea kayaking anywhere in the world. And then those sea caves, again, we call them the ice caves in the winter, but the sea caves on the mainland, you can walk to them and look down on them from a trail. If you don't have a boat or don't have access to the water or don't have a lot of time, you can do that in just an hour. Or you can take your own kayak, or you can go with one of the outfitters for a half day and see the sea caves. And then if you have the ability to get out and kayak amongst the islands, it's probably some of the best kayaking and camping you'll find anywhere.
I can attest to the kayaking, the sea caves. How amazing was that to be able to actually kayak inside of those sea caves? What's the best advice you have for people who want to get out and enjoy National Parks Week, and specifically, the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore? How do we plan ahead?
Well, I think the planning is the key. You know, if you were to come up this week here. The park is open, although there's no commercial services that are available, but the mainland hiking trail is spectacular. Go over to Myers Beach. It was mentioned that there are no admission fees to national parks around the country this week, but actually there's never an admission fee to the Apostle Isles National Lakeshore. We don't charge an entrance fee. There is a parking fee at Myers Beach, but it's pretty nominal. Anyway, you can go to Myers Beach and you can hike over to the sea caves this time of year. That's probably the limit of what's really available to most people. We've got a great film in our visitor center. But I'd say if you can't get up here or want to save it for a trip where you can do a little bit more, as James said, the websites are terrific. There's a lot of really good virtual experiences you can have. Right now we've got some really cool 360-degree views, videos on our website about what it would be like to climb one of the lighthouse towers in the park. So plan your visit now for June, July, or August, and then you'll be ready when you really come.
All right. Thanks, Bob. See you then.
All right. Thanks, Joyce.
Bob Krummenacker, Park Superintendent at Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. James Kaiser stays with us. And, James, have you had the pleasure of being at the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore?
I have not, and that sounds absolutely spectacular. That I am putting that on my list. He made it sound incredible.
It really is. It's great. We have one practical question. We had a listener who wanted to know if there was she had a daughter who's in a wheelchair, and she wants to know if there are any national parks that that her daughter could access.
Yeah, absolutely. National parks are very conscious of accessibility issues. A lot of visitors to national parks are older, and they're not as mobile. They can't go on multi-day hikes into the backcountry. But there are so many ways to enjoy the parks extremely easily. Obviously there's terrific driving routes, lots of paved wheelchair access at extraordinary viewpoints. There should be no reason why she shouldn't be able to go out and enjoy the parks.
And Joan from Cantlin emailed, and she says, I recommend Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. That is gorgeous. James, it has it's called Pictured Rocks because the rocks are all different colors from the minerals in the rocks, and it's just gorgeous. And she also recommends Voyageurs National Monument in northern Minnesota. That one I'm not familiar with. Either one of those, James?
I think that could be a national park. And this is one of those things, again, why are there so many national parks, out west, Arizona, California, Utah? A lot of it has to do with the fact that, it's relatively easy to make national parks out there, where it was a little bit harder in more populous parts of the country. But you guys have extraordinary things, and just because they're not national parks, there's national monuments, national seashores, so much that you guys can do around Wisconsin.
Yeah, there is. And what's interesting, too, is that we do think of the stunning beauty, the natural beauty, the scenic beauty of our national parks, which they have. But there's also, there's a lot of cultural and historical sites that are involved with our national park system as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. The Statue of Liberty, Hamilton Grange in Manhattan. Speaking of, by the way, you'd mentioned Parks 101, which is a collaboration between the National Park Service and the National Park Foundation, which is the nonprofit partner of the parks. Today, they're going to be doing a Facebook Live with Jordan Fisher, who's one of the stars of Hamilton. He's going to broadcast it live from Hamilton Grange. That's going to be at 6 p.m. And a lot of that is to bring more awareness to, the historic aspect of the National Park Service and some of the places that they protect and preserve. And, yeah, it's a great way to learn about the history of the country.
Ellen emails, in recent years, I have been fortunate to go to Grand Tetons, Yellowstone, Badlands, Glacier, and Acadia National Parks. It's hard to pick a favorite park. Though I would recommend when going to Acadia, don't forget the Skudik Peninsula. Do you know what she means there?
Skudik Peninsula, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, standing on the huge rocks. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that touches on a terrific point, which is, you know, there's a lot of talk about overcrowding in national parks, about national parks being, quote, loved to death. And really, you know, what I've sort of observed within a lot of the parks is it's not so much an overcrowding problem as an overconcentration problem. You know, there's always one or two or three incredibly famous places within all the parks, and that's where everybody tends to congregate. But if you go to some of the lesser-known areas within the parks, exactly like Skudik Peninsula, you can escape the crowds. You can enjoy incredible landscapes. Just because it's not famous and well-known does not mean that it's not beautiful or should not be enjoyed. So really, when you go to the parks, it's worth your effort to seek out some of the lesser-known places. And by the way, this is where a good guidebook can really come in handy.
That's right. We have just a minute to go. What's your next national park adventure?
Ooh, so I am going to be heading to Acadia in just a few weeks. You know, I'm from there. My family's still there. I always make time to visit. But really planning a trip to some of the parks out west, you know, really want to see some of the Utah parks. I'm going to be going to Grand Canyon, to Yosemite, hiking Half Dome. So, yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, sounds great. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, Joy, thank you. It was an absolute pleasure, and I really hope your listeners take advantage of National Park Week to do some research and start thinking about the parks they'd like to visit, because they really are some of the most incredible places in the United States.
Definitely. James Kaiser, travel writer, photographer. He has written 4 national park guidebooks, including guides for Yosemite and the Grand Canyon. He shares travel tips at jameskaiser.com. Thanks to Chris Molina and to Nyasia Ellison for producing this program. Thank you for listening, and thanks for your questions and tips, too. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.